Okay, so for those that don't know me, my name is Ali Hussein. I've been at ADI for about 13 years in a variety of different finance roles. Never in a million years would I think that I would be standing up here presenting the new financial model, but here we are. And I think you'll like what you're going to see. You've seen a variety of, I guess you've heard a variety of accents here today, from Ireland to the UK, all over the place. And I'll introduce you to my mix of Pakistani Canadian, which I think is a very unique accent, but don't hold it against me. Okay, by the way, that's Eric. Hi, Eric. Well, Eric is well, why don't you tell us, Eric? I introduced you earlier. So Eric, formerly of Linear Tech, ran their battery management solutions business. I want to just identify Eric for those folks that are here so that they can grab him and ask him all kinds of questions. I'm sure he'll be happy to answer. Willingly and happily. All right, thanks, Eric. Okay, you've heard some great presentations here today. As the finance guy, let me try and bring a little bit of tough love into the room and maybe level set a little bit. Because I think everything you heard today is very exciting. I think if you're a long-term investor, these are exciting themes to play. As the finance guy, I have a different view. I believe it. I'm there. I'm great. But I share your view that in a lot of these markets, it takes a lot of time. And okay, let's start this presentation. So we're going to put a nice financial wrapper here now on everything that you've heard. So for those that are new to the ADI story, let me just spend 2 seconds level setting. We're now a $5-plus billion revenue company with the vast majority of our products, about 80% or so, coming from these very long life cycle sticky markets like industrial, communications infrastructure, and automotive. If you look at the combined histories of ADI, Linear, and Hittite, that amounts to over 100 years of high-performance analog leadership, helping our customers solve some very, very tough challenges. I think you'd be hard-pressed to see other competitors out in the space focused on high-performance analog that have been doing this on a collective basis for as long as we have. In addition, we now have the number one or number two position across all of the building blocks of analog, so a market leader. We have tremendous diversity in our business. We have 50,000 products that are servicing 150,000 plus customers. Tremendous degree of sustainability and great constancy here as we progress. And then lastly, I mean, you saw it in the quality of the presentations, there's just a whole bunch of these secular drivers that are going to be driving our business over the long term. And the mantra at ADI is profitable growth, free cash flow growth. So when you think about ADI, think about ADI under those two lenses. Now, if somebody woke up from 2007 and said, "What has ADI become over the last 10 odd years?" And again, this is excluding Linear. Over the last 10 years, the company has become vastly bigger, has become vastly more profitable. Revenues have increased from $2.4 billion to $3.9 billion. Our operating margins have expanded from 23% to 36% as we pivoted to the highest value applications in industrial, automotive, infrastructure, for example. In addition, we had a series of operational efficiencies that we executed over this period of time that helped drive operating margins as well. And of course, you do all those things and your free cash flow margins expand as well. Now, what that's done is we are now officially a top 5% S&P free cash flow generator. And I think you'll see today, as we get to the end of this presentation, about our plan for driving these free cash flow margins even higher. And when you generate a lot of free cash flow, we've been returning a lot of free cash flow as well. So over that 10-year period, we've returned $7 billion of our cash flow here to shareholders, to our owners. Again, you do all of those things, generally speaking, the stock price responds. And so over the last 10 years, the ADI total shareholder return has been about two times that of the S&P 500. So John, we talked about this earlier. It was your question about Hittite. So on the left side of this chart is had Hittite remained a standalone company, again with the leverage that you get as a combined company, Hittite's revenues would have grown at a mid-single digit CAGR since acquisition. The market recall has been pretty flat since then. So we've outperformed the market. Number two, the first co-design products are now coming to market this year across these high-value applications of automotive, communications infrastructure, and industrial. Again, there's a certain cadence to these products. It takes a while, but we're now starting to see the results of those investments. And I'd like to point out that the integration was very successful. If you look at the sales pipeline today, it is two times that what Hittite standalone revenues were back in 2014. Leveraging the distribution channel, leveraging a vastly larger sales force. On the cost synergy side, we've captured all of the cost synergies that we talked about. There's the Pakistani-Canadian action coming out, talked about. And I think, importantly, on the integration side, we did employ this. I mean, you've heard this notion, you've heard this theme throughout today's presentations, taking the best of both. So we have adopted the best processes for both companies. We've adopted the best leadership from both companies. And I'd say overall, that's been a very, very successful acquisition and integration. And it's, I think in investors' minds, serves as a proof point about how we think about M&A. And by the way, this blueprint is exactly, not exactly, but is really how we think about M&A and how we're thinking about the integration of Linear. Okay, so let's talk about Linear. On the left side of the screen is everything we told you when we announced the acquisition last July. There are compelling strategic and financial benefits to doing this acquisition. Out of the gates, in our first full quarter, we expect accretion from the deal to be 15%. I expect that to accelerate into 2018. And I think if you look at this on a five-year period, you should expect to see even greater accretion from this deal. Secondly, and we've talked about this before, our TAM expands from $8 billion to $14 billion by virtue of the complementarity of our product focus. And lastly, there's a great deal of complementarity between our products, as I mentioned, our customer base, our respective customer bases, I should say, and the various applications we play in. And you've seen it throughout today's presentations. And again, I'm not telling you anything you haven't already seen today, but a great deal of complementarity, even in areas where you think they're not complementary. When you kind of dig under the covers a little bit, you see that they are very complementary. So now we've acquired this $15 billion asset. Vince reminds me it's $14.7 billion. But we've acquired this great asset, and I think in the minds of investors, what we'd like to communicate today is how we plan to extract the value, using your terminology, Charles, when we talked last. I think you do these types of acquisitions, as we did in the case of Hittite, for the purpose of revenue synergies. Now, I know shareholders discount those, but let's talk about them, and we'll size up the opportunity for investors. Now, inherently, when you do an acquisition, there are going to be cost synergies. There's duplicative activities. There's areas that you can scale up in terms of your purchasing power, for example. And we'll talk to you about that as well. And then lastly, I think, in terms of the acquisition, we did take on a fair amount of debt. And there's a really nice balance sheet deleveraging story that should provide tailwinds to earnings per share as we delever from the acquisition. Okay, let's talk about revenue synergies first. So there's really three sources of revenue synergies. One is in the complementarity of the customer bases. One is in the complementarity of the application sets that we play in. And lastly, it's to have more of a profitable growth focus to drive free cash flow. Steve earlier talked about this in one of the answers to the questions. I'll try and size it up for you here. But it's having a very a real laser focus on driving free cash flow. Okay, so let's talk about the complementary customer bases. On the blue side of this chart, you see this was standalone ADI. 60% of our revenue was derived from what we call these strategic and key customers, or large customers. 40% of our revenue was derived from broad market customers, smaller, mid-sized customers. With Linear in red, you can see the flip is actually true. Vince had made a comment earlier about about linear sort of rifle shooting areas where ADI wasn't playing in. This is a great proof point of that strategy. With 70% of its revenues, almost a flip of ADI, coming from broad markets, and 30% of its revenues coming from the larger customers. So in the larger customers, the opportunity is to sell more product. In the broad market customers, it's to sell to more customers and potentially more products. We've already seen this slide. The gray area here is where ADI has historically been strong. The green areas here are where linear have been historically strong. There's some areas of overlap, but even as we talked about earlier, even in areas where there is overlap, there's a great deal of complementarity. And certainly from a product perspective, we've, I think, talked about it ad nauseam about how complementary power is to the signal chain. In the past, I'd say the linear focus was primarily on profit optimization, and who can blame them? They had the best gross margins and the best operating margins in the industry. Our focus is not only profit optimization, it is also the optimization of growth and free cash flow. So I think as we look today on day one or day one plus, we're looking to shift this focus to drive growth, profits, and importantly, free cash flow generation. So here's the opportunity. We've sized it up. There's up to $1 billion of annual revenue synergies that we think we can drive from this acquisition. Now, it's up to $1 billion. We're likely not to get all the $1 billion, but I wanted to make sure that we sized it up. This translates into an approximate 300 basis point adder to the standalone, or sorry, the combined company revenue growth. And I think that's an important point to make. I don't think it's zero. You do these, you know, the kinds of acquisitions ADI, and I showed Hittite as the proof point, right? So we have grown the revenue above the market. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity to drive revenue synergies. They'll likely start in 2019. But as you know, half of our revenue is from the industrial market. That has a certain cycle to it. It takes longer to uplift. But I think we should start to see some of these synergies in the 2019 timeframe. Okay, let's talk about cost synergies. So we've always talked about $150 million of cost synergies when you bring the two companies together. Two points I'd like to make. One is we are firmly on track on those $150 million of cost synergies. On the cost of sales side, we should start to see that benefit in the first quarter of 2018. On the OpEx side, $20 million of the $100 million run rate is now baked in to the guidance that we gave you for the third quarter. So there's an additional $80 million on the come there. And then I guess the other incremental is that we're upping the cost synergy target from $150 million to $250 million. And the incremental $100 million is to come from really taking a look at the combined company cost base across really the entire business, all the operations. And that should start to kick in the 3 to 5 year timeframe. In total, the $250 million synergy here represents 8% of the combined company cost base. Okay, let's talk about the capital structure. I know this is very important to a lot of investors. I think the high-level takeaway from this particular chart is we have ample liquidity. Currently, we have $2.9 billion of liquidity. $1.9 billion of that is in the form of essentially cash. And there's an additional $1 billion in revolver capacity. We, at the time of the acquisition, or actually once we closed the financing, we had $8.9 billion as our total debt load. As of the end of the second quarter, we made a $200 million payment on our term loan balance. So now we're at $8.7 billion of total debt. Of that $8.7 billion of total debt, you can see the split on the right side of the screen. And really, the takeaway there is that $4.8 billion of that $8.7 billion is in the form of term loans. And the remainder is in the form of fixed rate debt bonds, essentially. Okay. Now, when we announced the deal, we targeted a 3.8 times net debt to EBITDA out of the gates. And in typical ADI fashion, we execute aggressively against those targets. And so we came out at 3x net leverage, which I think is significantly better. The plan is to pay down over $1 billion of that debt per year. We have confidence in our model that we can do that. Maybe we can do a little bit better than that, but that's what we're modeling. And we should get to 2x net debt by the first half of our fiscal year 2019. And that essentially is early calendar 2019. Now, once we get to the 2x net debt to EBITDA, that will trigger a new capital allocation model. Now, we've always held the dividend to be the cornerstone of our capital allocation policy. That will continue. The incremental news, well, there's two pieces of incremental news. One is we're going to turn the share buyback program on once we hit the 2x number. And we're going to target a free cash flow return of 80%-100% of our free cash flow after debt service. So the way to think about it is every dollar of cash that gets generated will go to pay down the debt to the extent we can in that particular year. What's left over will go towards a steadily increasing dividend. And then depending how, you know, stock price valuation, this, that, we look at intrinsic value as well for our share buyback program. But overall, investors should know that we're targeting the 80%-100% free cash flow return after debt service as soon as we hit the 2x net debt to EBITDA. Okay, so here's the summary of what we plan to do over the next few years. We've already talked about the $250 million of synergies. Here's the timeline. We've talked about the up to $1 billion revenue synergy opportunity starting in earnest in 2019. We've talked about the $1 billion plus per year debt paydown to get us to a 2x net debt to EBITDA number somewhere in early calendar 2019, at which point we'll reinstitute the share buyback, and we're going to continue growing the dividend between now and then and beyond. And like I said, the target free cash flow return is 80%-100% after debt service. Okay, I'm getting close. We're getting close to the end. I wanted to give you a bit of context around how we're thinking about our revenue growth over the mid to long term. You've heard some great things today, and what I wanted to do is give you a little bit of context on how we're thinking about the revenue growth buildup. By end market, we think consumer and communications infrastructure can grow up to the mid-single digits. In automotive, I think there's a real tailwind there, so we think we can grow that market up to 3x the SAR. And in industrial, I think just based on the crop of new products that are coming out, the investments that we've made over the last, you know, 7 to 10 years that are now starting to bear fruit, we feel very confident about that particular number. All told, that'll add up to somewhere in the mid-single digits over the next several years. Now, we consider that to be a base growth rate. We consider that to be in a GDP environment that we've frankly been in over the last few years. There's additional growth drivers that we think we'll get, but we have not baked in to the mid-single digit growth rate. Linear tech-related revenue synergies, for example. Half of our business is in industrial. It's very sensitive to CapEx and GDP. If we get into a stronger GDP environment, we should do better. And the other thing I'd point out is, you know, you saw the quality of Yusuf's presentation on consumer. There are a plethora of opportunities to drive revenue growth that's profitable, that will generate a lot of free cash flow that would be incremental to this number. Frankly, we've been investing in the markets that we play in at a pretty healthy clip, and so we expect to see these kinds of growth rates. And I'd say it's not, you know, some kind of a pipe dream either. We're seeing the products coming out. We're seeing them taking a hold in the marketplace. And so that gives us a fair amount of confidence that we can do this. And boy, if we can't do this, then we have a problem. So let's talk about how we're thinking about the various pieces of the long-term financial model. We already talked about mid-single-digit growth. We already talked about the areas for upside. On the gross margin side, we're targeting 70%+ gross margins. And so it'll be somewhere around there, maybe a little bit better, but at the low end to be in the 70%+ range. At that kind of gross margin model range, we're still leading the industry. And I think for the investments that we've made, for the areas that we play in, for the value that we create for our customers, I think that's a testament to the value that we can generate for them. On the operating margin side, we expect operating expenses to, of course, lag our revenue growth. And so we're targeting operating margins to be in the range of 39% to 45% over the next few years. I would view that as more of a journey rather than an absolute. We're not going to get to 45% operating margins tomorrow. But I think based on the inputs that I just gave you in the various slides, I think over the next 3 to 5 years, could we get there? I think so. In terms of how we're thinking about earnings per share and free cash flow growth over the next several years, if you plug in all the inputs I just gave you, and boy, I did because I jockeyed the Excel myself, that should generate earnings per share, free cash flow growth per year of 8 to 12%. Assuming a 2% dividend yield, that is 10 to 14% annual total shareholder return, which is I think is pretty meaningful for investors. On a free cash flow margin basis then, we think we can drive free cash flow margins of 34 to 42% of revenue. These would be industry-leading free cash flow margins at the high end of the range. And again, I view this more as a journey. Over the next 3 to 5 years, I think we can get to the high end of that free cash flow margin model range. And we've talked about incremental levers to the top line. And those, again, would be incremental levers as you think about the P&L. And then we've already talked about how we're thinking about the capital allocation model. 80 to 100% of our free cash flow returned after debt service as soon as we hit the 2x net leverage ratio. So let's bring it all home. This is why we're all here. Okay, this is it. This is the slide. You want to invest in ADI, this is the slide. So number one, market leader across all high-performance analog product categories. We've talked about that. We've got growth drivers across really all of our markets. We have up to $1 billion of revenue synergies, and we have $250 million of long-term cost synergies that we've identified. There's a tailwind to EPS simply by virtue of deleveraging. And so there's a fair amount of self-help levers, I would say, as some of the sell side likes to refer to it. And then again, we're targeting this very strong free cash flow return after debt service. So overall, let me read from the green bubble, high-performance analog leader driving long-term profitable growth. So with that, I am done with the official piece of the, I guess, today's presentations. We can now move on to the Q&A session.